It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Imagine you're sitting in the dentist chair when a female Asian dental assistant says this.
I used a credit card to treat myself to a little chunk of heaven, baby. That singles weekend in Tijuana. Freaky deaky. But first, I needed to power up my babe magnet. Self-tanning cream, fresh hair plugs, and a complete wax job on the old chassis. Ouch. Slow down, ladies. There's enough Larry for everyone.
Fraud early warning. When we see suspicious spending, we'll alert you and stop it. City Identity Theft Solutions. That's using your card wisely.
When companies say they are protecting your identity, are they? Identity theft is on the rise again after two straight years of decline. That according to a report by Javelin Research. According to the survey, some 12.6 million Americans were victimized by identity theft in 2012, about 1 million more than the survey showed in 2011. The criminals made off with $3 billion more than in 2011 as well. So why is it happening and how can it be prevented? I'm joined now in studio by Mike Prasinski, Chief of Staff and Vice President of Communications for a Pittsburgh-based internet security company called Taversa. He joins us in Studio A. Mike Prasinski, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What questions do you have about protecting your identity? How concerned are you about identity theft? We'd especially like to hear from you if you've been a victim of identity theft. 412-246-2002, the number to call. You can email us at esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Mike Prasinski, as a certified identity theft risk management specialist, why are we seeing this sharp jump in cases of identity theft in the past year?
Well, the easy answer is probably the economy. You know, you have individuals out there that are trying to keep the lights turned on, trying to pay their bills. They're going to do it any way they can. And in a lot of cases, they're going to go ahead and use the information of people that they're closest to. It could be a relative. It could be a neighbor. It could be someone that they work with. In about a third of these cases, people know actually who performed the crime. It's called friendly fraud, and that's probably part of the reason why you see this. The other reason could be just the way the reporting's done. You know, identity theft's a different type of crime than you see with auto theft or home burglaries. The way it's reported are either in a survey like you have here in Javelin, or it's an annual report that comes from the Federal Trade Commission. And in both cases, it all comes down to the consumer or the victim on how they report it or if they report it. I've traveled the country for the last 7 years working on identity theft and talking to individuals. And as I do these speaking engagements, I always ask people how many people here have been victims of identity theft. And you'll see probably about half the room to raise their hands. But then as soon as you ask them how many people have actually reported the crime, all the hands go down. So right there, you know the numbers aren't really accurate.
And why is that? Why wouldn't somebody report that their identity's been stolen?
Well, the biggest part of the crime is what happens with credit cards, much like you did here in the open. And as soon as you call your credit card company, the credit card company says, oh, don't worry about it. We got it taken care of. We'll cancel that card. We'll issue a new one. But then the crime never gets reported anywhere else. And so the numbers just kind of are what they are.
How much are data breaches contributing to the problem?
Well, you know, it's certainly contributed to the problem from the standpoint that there's, you know, 600 million, you know, pieces of data out there every single year that normally wouldn't be out there. And that's, again, those are the ones that get reported. You know, identity theft and data breaches in particular are a different animal. They don't have to be reported. Each state has their own reporting standards. And depending on where you live and what the crime is and what company you actually lost the data from and how many people were affected, they may never report that loss at all. So The information's getting out there. The part of that survey was that you're five times more likely to become a victim of identity theft if you were part of a data breach. And what we're talking about there is if you were one of those people that got a letter in the mail saying, hey, we're unfortunate, we have to tell you that, you know, either your information got hacked or somebody broke into our system or we had an employee walk away with information. But you know what? We're sorry it happened. We're taking steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. and here are the things that you have to do to go fix the problems. That doesn't seem right to me. You know, if they're holding on to my data, they're telling me they're going to protect my data, so then why do I have to do all the work to fix it once they lost it?
What does a company – I know, for example, some credit companies, credit card companies, they will hire a separate company to store the data and supposedly protect the data. But are companies doing enough, in your opinion, to protect people's information, or maybe just doing enough – to get by and perhaps putting people's information at risk?
Well, the bigger companies are, and in some cases the federal government's come in and said, you know, we're going to put these standards in place that says you have to do X, Y, and Z to make sure you're protecting data. But it's really the smaller organizations that really don't have the money to go protect the data that way. I saw a story the other day about an Orange Julius franchise down in Florida. The owner had four or five different Orange Julius stores, and one of his employees actually just put a skimming device on the credit card readers where you swipe the credit cards, and for years had been taking credit card numbers and selling them off as a little side business. So you could have all the data protection you want, but all it takes is somebody on the inside to be able to have access to whether it's employment records or to equipment, and it doesn't matter.
So there you are in the mall, and you're thirsty. You want to go grab yourself an orange juice, and the next thing you know, somebody's stealing all your personal information.
Right, and these criminals aren't the dumbest people in the world either. So they're going to go out there, and they're going to, in some cases, make purchases that that you may make, you know, particularly in the same area, or they're going to count on the fact that you don't check your statements close
enough. Kind of like the commercial where it's something obviously that is not at all in line with what the woman whose identity was stolen would have purchased for herself.
Absolutely. They're going to go and do these small purchases to make sure the card works, to make sure that they can kind of go out there and use it. And then all of a sudden they're going to hit you with something big because they know that sooner or later the card's going to be turned off.
What is the most common form of identity theft?
Well, it really depends on where you live. This crime takes different shapes depending on the area, depending on who's living in that area. So it could be anywhere from credit card fraud all the way up to someone stealing your Social Security, your tax return, and going out there and making money.
What about, let's say, Pittsburgh, for example. What about somebody who lives here in the Steel City? What would be the most common form of identity here in this town?
Well,
the new
report's going to come out here probably in the next couple of weeks from the Federal Trade Commission. They do the best job of going out there and tracking this. But last year, it was anything from employment fraud, the tax return fraud. It was the credit card fraud. And the difference between those three is significant. With credit card fraud, as we've come to find out, you know, if once you report it, you're really not responsible for what's lost, right? It's up to the credit card company. They're going to write it off. With those other forms, whether it be employment, benefits, tax return, those type of crimes are going to take you longer to fix the problems. You're probably going to end up losing more, and you're going to have problems for a lot longer.
We've been hearing more about people getting their tax returns hacked into and not getting their refund. Somebody else is getting the refund. Has that been happening more often?
It's been going on for years, and now the IRS is certainly putting some processes in place that are supposed to fix the problem. They're going to do some verifications.
Years later,
again, I've been doing this for 7 years, and we've been talking about this for 7 years. So it's one of those things that they hope that they can slow down. I don't know if you'll ever be able to stop it. Criminals, once they know what the fix is, they figure out ways to go out there and change it. But the bottom line is, once they get that Social Security number, whether it's a tax return, whether it's gaining employment, whether it's getting health benefits or getting credit cards, that's the keys of the kingdom.
We're talking with Mike Prusinski, Chief of Staff and Vice President of Communications for a Pittsburgh-based internet security company called Tversa. He's with us here in Studio A. If you have a comment or question and would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What questions do you have about protecting your identity, and how concerned are you about identity theft? We'd especially like to hear from you if you've been a victim of identity theft. What are some things that you can share with people that might help them from becoming victims of the same thing? New account fraud jumped 50% last year. How does this happen, and why is it on the rise?
Well, again, it's reporting. So if individuals that actually had that problem are reporting it more, well, you're going to see a significant jump. The good thing about that is generally when you get that type of increase, it draws a lot of attention to it. And so next year you're probably going to see a decrease in it because people are going to go out there and take the steps necessary to limit that. But that's really the one that causes the most problems. If somebody was to able to go out there and create new accounts for you, whether it be utilities, a bank account, savings account, that's where it's going to take the longest for you to go fix those problems.
This study that we've been talking about by Javelin Research, who is Javelin Research, by the way?
Oh, it's a research company. I think they're out of California that does a lot of things with identity theft, fraud, consumer interest type surveys. They've been doing this survey in particular for 4 or 5 years. It's generally financed by the banking industry and some identity theft companies because they want to get an idea of how bad the problem is. But the problem with the survey is they're only talking to, I think in this case, it was about 5,000 individuals from various parts of the United States. Now then they throw it into a mathematical formula, and wow, there you got the numbers. But again, if they're not hitting the right area, if they're not talking to the right people, the numbers could actually be higher than they are.
The survey found 7% of smartphone owners were victims of identity fraud. Why?
Well, all of us are using smartphones for something, right? We've got either our Social Security numbers in there. We have our contacts. We have our credit cards. We get emails that are being hacked. And you have to understand when they talk about identity theft in some of these surveys, they group everything together. So if your email got hacked, if your Facebook page got hacked, if your LinkedIn page got hacked, if you fell victim to malware or some sort of phishing virus, they throw that all into this. So when you're talking about checking things on your smartphone, which many of us do, or an iPad, you have a tendency to fall victim to these problems.
And despite warnings that social networks are a great resource for fraudsters, apparently consumers are still sharing a significant amount of personal information that is frequently used to authenticate a consumer's identity.
I don't know how many times we have to tell consumers, again, these speaking engagements I do around the country, you'll sit there and you'll tell them, you'll show them all the dangers of a Facebook page or the Instagrams or all these other things that are out there now and how protected you need to be. You need to show them how to do the security features, and yet they'll still go out there and not set them properly, still post the same information. And one of the things that they totally forget about Facebook is that you'll go out there and you'll talk about all the places that you are and how you're having a great time. Well, if somebody gets into your page, which we've seen many times, all of a sudden they know where you're not. And then all of a sudden you get home from your trip and you see that somebody's broken into your house.
What is it that the survey does not show?
Well, the thing I wish the survey showed was more focus on the non-credit related items. That's where the real problem with identity theft is. You know, it brings up the point that we lose all this money and they talk about all the credit, most of the problem is with credit cards. But really, that problem doesn't exist for consumers. It may take some time. It may take a phone call. But really, it's that non-credit related items that we need to be concerned about because that's where the biggest problem is. And most of the time, people are going to look to you to solve them. And it could take you anywhere up to 40 hours to 100 hours to fix the problem, if you can fix it at all. Again, you need to remember, once your Social Security number is in the wrong hands, it doesn't get turned off. So this person that's got it can use it over and over and over. They can even sell it to other individuals to go use it, not just here in the United States, but overseas.
We're talking with Mike Przinski, Chief of Staff and Vice President of Communications for Pittsburgh-based internet security company Traversa. And we will take your calls and comments at 412-246-2002 as we continue to discuss the issue of identity theft, what to do if you are a victim of it, and hopefully how you can prevent it. We'll take your calls again at 412-246-2002 when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about identity theft. It's on the rise again after two straight years of decline, that according to a report by Javelin Research. And we're talking with Mike Przinski, Chief of Staff and Vice President of Communications for the Pittsburgh-based internet security company Traversa. If you have a comment or question, 412-246-2002. What questions do you have about protecting your identity? 412-246-2002. Let's go to Ben in Edgewood, who has a question. Ben, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hello, Ben.
Hey, great topic here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Is what really gave me pause is the Social Security number. And so my wife and I were having a conversation a few nights ago about getting our taxes done and going to a larger place like an H&R Block. And what concerns me is that you have a lot of people that are just hired for that for tax season. What concerns should we have for going into a larger company like that and turning our Social Security number over to someone? And what questions can we ask when we go in there if we choose that route?
That's a great question and something that I'm sure a lot of people think about. If they're not, they should be. What about it, Mike?
Well, temporary employees happen all the time, whether it's tax season or over the holidays when stores and other places need to put on extra employees to handle the load. But, Ben, anytime you give out your Social Security number, you want to ask a couple questions. First of all, you want to ask them, how do they protect that data? And then the second thing you want to ask them, is it stored on site? Is it stored off site, as Paul and I were talking about earlier? And then you want to ask them, what procedures do they have in place if something was to happen? In other words, what are they going to do to fix your problems? I'm not familiar with H&R Block to see if they've partnered with anybody that would go fix a problem if they had any. But those are the questions you want to ask. In regard to giving out the Social Security number, you never want to give out your Social Security number to anybody, but if you really think about it, you've given it out a million times in your lifetime, whether it to be doctors, dentists, the state, where you went to school, when you got married. And so this is just another place that you're giving it out to. What I would rather you do is go out there and take steps to protect yourself. So whether it be something you can do yourself, like a fraud alert or placing a credit freeze on your account, or look into the industry of people that are out there that offer up some sort of protections, go do those things first and then go live your life. Don't worry about if you give your information to H&R Block or anybody else, because there have been hundreds of people that have come before them.
That's a great point. And, yeah, and I don't mean to single out H&R Block. That's just the one that comes to mind. So the first thing you said, what answers do I want to hear when I ask them, how are you going to protect me?
Well, chances are you're not going to like the answer that you're going to get. Because most places, no matter where you do this at, whether it's a doctor's office, dentist, you're going to have somebody look at you like, what are you doing? Why would you even ask me that? And they're probably going to have to go find somebody else that can get you the answers. The answer you want is you want them to say that it's not stored on site, that only certain individuals have access to it. In some cases, even when you fill out a paper document, you want them to say that they've destroyed it. Or what you can actually do, Ben, is you can have them input the paper document into their system right then and then tell them to give it back to you, because you want to ask them, do you shred this paper document? A lot of times we see stories and we hear from police that, you know, these companies just take these paper documents and throw them out in the back and people can get them. So you want to do anything you can to keep your information close, and you have the right to ask these questions.
And when you talk about a company like H&R Block, I mean, they've been around for a long time. Identity theft, I'm assuming, did not begin with modern technology or computers.
Well, the earliest form is found in the Bible. So
there you go.
So it's been around a while.
So they had to have some paper shredders before the computer age to destroy documents, and you would assume that they would, but maybe that's where the problem lies, is we assume they're doing this. It doesn't hurt to ask.
Well, we've only been following the crime since about 2005. You know, that's where it's really been in the headlines. And I think Bob, my CEO, talked about when he was here, talked about how it's not really a coincidence that the peer-to-peer networks came about the exact same time that all of a sudden you start hearing about the increase in identity theft. So the great thing about technology is that it allows us to travel the world and get college degrees and share things with our friends. But also, you know what they say, anything that's good for you is bad for you, right?
Well, both Twitter and Facebook have had to announce in recent weeks that they've both been hacked. And so that plays right into the problem you're talking about. Let's go back to the phones, 412-246-2002. We have Mallory in Midland who had her identity stolen. Mallory, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Great show. Always tune in.
Thank you.
I wanted to call because it really gave me pause, too, just like the first caller. I actually had my identity stolen last year, and it was an enormous mess to get everything figured out and had to file police reports and change things several times and finally did get all of it taken care of. It really, you know, I'm glad to say I had very little impact on my finances, but on my time it was enormous. But they did have my Social Security number. I came to find out that they had several attempts of credit cards in my name that they were trying to file for, and so they still have that credit card. Now, I have since then subscribed to credit monitoring with one of the big three credit agencies for like $10 a month, but is there something else I should be doing now? I'm terrified. You're saying they may sell that information to someone overseas, or I'm just wondering, is there something more that I could do at this point, having already been a victim? And I'll take your answer offline.
Oh, well,
thank you.
Actually, Mallory, if you can hang on for a second, because there's something I wanted to follow up on, but let's let Mike answer your question first.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, Mallory, first of all, I'm sorry that you had that problem. The thing you have to remember about credit monitoring is it's just monitoring your credit. So if those individuals that have your Social Security number, and again, I don't want to just pile on here and give you bad news, but they could be selling that to individuals that could go out there and find a job, get health benefits, unemployment benefits, and you would never know it with credit monitoring. And so what you need to be looking for is something that's going to go out there and limit access or limit the possibility of them using that number. So a fraud alert, a credit freeze, both of those are really good points that you can do, and there's very little to no cost to those. But again, check the industry. There are some other companies out there, LifeLock being one of them, that can go ahead and watch for that other activity as well. But sadly enough, it still comes down to you. You did all the right things and the reporting and the things you did, and you're absolutely right about the time. But now you've got to go out there and put something in place that's going to limit them from doing things with that Social Security number. And really, a fraud alert, it's free, it's easy, and it really does put you in more control.
Oh, wow, that's wonderful. I'm so glad that I called. Thank you.
And in the, you said this was a year ago that this happened, Mallory?
Last summer, I got a call at the beach. When we were making dinner, we had come up from the beach that Busy Beaver wanted to verify the $500 purchase that I had made online. And since it was over $500, they make a courtesy call. And that was kind of the tip of the iceberg. I wasn't even home when all of this hit. It was terrible.
How was the rest of that vacation?
Very worrisome. Spent a lot of time on the phone. It wasn't really that much of a vacation.
Yeah, that normally happens that way.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to take some of the advice that Mike has given and clear some of this up. It sounds like a real nightmare, and we're sorry that it happened to you. But thank you for calling, Mallory.
Thank you for having the show. Thank you both very much.
You're welcome. Let's go to Chris in Moon, who's been waiting. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
We hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Quick comment and then a question. The comment was I want to find out whether or not you thought that networks should be held responsible for things such as identity theft. And the reason is that spam pretty much came about because the Church of Scientology was taking vengeance against its critics. But it followed an FCC ruling, which said that basically networks are not held responsible for what goes over their networks. So that's the question. And the comment is the one thing about this is there doesn't seem to be any alternative. You can't go back to information online. I just discovered yesterday the library, the Allegheny County Library, is storing your driver's license number. And I was like, what do you need this for? I mean, because I remember showing them my license, you know, just to get a library card. But, I mean, this is to get a library card. Come on. So, I mean, so the issue is, what's the alternative? I mean, so there's this sort of feeling of an illusion of control over the situation. You know what I mean? Anyway, go on.
Interesting points. Okay, well, thank you, Chris. And what about what he's saying, Mike?
Well, as far as the networks go, I think the FCC, you know, hit it right. Their view is, you know, the networks are just providing an opportunity. What goes on out there is up to the individual corporations and up to the consumer to control. And that's kind of where we stand in that. And so whether you see it in piracy of movies, and there were just some things that happened yesterday with that, or music, the illegal downloading and streaming of music, or to identity theft and the stealing of data, it really, these are just avenues, the opportunities and how people use them or how they use them. Going to the second question in regard to storing of data, one of the things I meant to tell one of the earlier callers was that, you know, one of the things you should ask them is, why do you need my information? You don't have to provide them with the Social Security number. As a matter of fact, I challenge you, the next time you go into the doctor's office and you're filling out an application and you see that box there that says Social Security number, leave it blank. Turn it in and then ask them, why do they need it? Because a lot of times they don't need it for anything other than to verify your insurance, or two, just to use it as a filing mechanism. Well, if you've given them an insurance card, then they don't need to validate anything using your Social Security number. And if they need to use your Social Security number as a record-keeping mechanism, then give them something to do. You know, give them something else to do that with. So, again, challenge them anytime you want, and you don't have to give them that information at all.
We're talking about identity theft here on Essential Pittsburgh with Mike Prusinski, Chief of Staff and Vice President of Communications for Traversa, a Pittsburgh-based internet security company. Our number, 412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's go to Ray in Point Breeze. Ray, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hello, Ray. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thank you. My question really has to do with, for a number of years now, I've been very adamant about shredding mail that comes in, or any document that has our family name on an address and account number, whether they're bank statements or even, you know, we pay so many bills online, but even those little stubs at the bottom of it that typically you would rip off and mail in, I even shred those as well and keep the paper around for a while. Am I still crazy doing this? Is it still a widespread way to steal someone's identity through paper, or is it just a waste of my time?
It's not a waste of time. Anything you can do to limit the amount of information that's out there on you, you should do it. The one thing I didn't hear that you do, and I don't know if you get prescriptions filled at local drugstores or from doctors, but a lot of times there's information on those bottles that we forget to cross through as well. So I would do that as well. But the thing you need to know on the other side is that if somebody was to steal your trash, they came by and they got a trash full of that white paper, there actually are criminal organizations out there that have people that work for them that all they do is sit in these big warehouses and they put these pieces of paper back together.
This reminds me of the scene in Argo where the kids are in the big warehouse putting together the shredded documents from the American embassy.
Right, and it does happen. We've worked with law enforcement in other cities who have told us stories of organized crime rings that they've broken up. That they were actually had groups that would sit there and put the pieces of paper back together again.
Thank you for the call, Ray. Let's go to Alan in North Hills. Alan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Alan, go ahead. This is why we tell you to turn down your radio, because we're on a delay, and that can be confusing. Alan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Well, go ahead with your question, sir.
Okay, couple of points. First of all, it strikes me that the outfits that maintain this personal data about individuals should be held fully liable for any damages to individuals done as a result of their files being hacked or broken into or stolen or whatever. This doesn't seem to be happening. Additionally, the following leaves me curious. Every now and then, some of these identity thieves are caught. What sort of penalties do they suffer? Insofar as I'm aware, they do not suffer penalties anywhere near severe enough to compensate for the damage that they do. They should have inflicted on them, upon conviction, of course, long prison terms in the tank with the common criminals, not at some club fed. This isn't happening, though, I don't think. And that's one of the reasons why there is so much of this identity theft going on.
Well, it's an interesting point, Alan, and I guess the question, Mike, is would stricter penalties for this, for those who engage in identity theft, would that be a deterrent to keep people from doing this?
It would. You don't see many bank robberies right now, right? I mean, occasionally you'll see somebody that'll walk in and try to rob a bank. But, you know, you can walk in, rob a bank at gunpoint or whatever it is, and the average person walks away with about $5,000. Well, with identity theft, you can just use a pen, really, and you can just – or you can do it from your home, you know, on a computer and walk away with hundreds of thousands of dollars, and a first-time offender generally gets probation. So we do need stiffer penalties. We need law enforcement to have better resources so they can actually go out there and have specialized units that can help fight these crimes. Law enforcement is overwhelmed with the amount of people that come to them with these crimes, and in some cases – they're so overwhelmed that they can't even take police reports, or they'll tell them up front, we don't have time to investigate this. So we do need stronger penalties. And then as far as the companies, Alan, you're absolutely right. There needs to be stronger penalties. If you were to lose data, there needs to be something there that says, you know what, hey, we're going to make sure that you don't do it again.
And this may be one of the reasons why the bad guys seem to be coming out ahead in this situation. Ron in Bethel Park, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Citizen, and I have to carry my Medicare card with me, and wouldn't you know, all the seniors, their Medicare number is their Social Security number, and it's extremely dangerous, I think, to a point that nobody's brought up, and I'd like your opinion on it.
Well, it's you know, this is an easy interview to do, Paul, because everyone just keeps bringing up the exact same things I talk about all the time. It doesn't make any sense to me that we tell people, you know what, don't ever carry your Social Security card around, but yet for seniors, they're told you should keep your Medicare card, and yet the Medicare card, as you just heard, has all the information on it. So we need to be better in our messaging. We need to be better in what we're telling people to do, and we need to come up with a better system that doesn't force individuals to be or consumers to be in harm's way. Now, it all goes back to, now everyone's going to say the same thing. Well, consumers need to take the opportunity to protect themselves. And again, thankfully, there are things out there each of us can do for free or little cost that are going to put some sort of protections in place to make it more difficult for someone to use that information. And so all these companies, all these organizations bring it back to that, saying, if you want to be protected, go protect yourself. We're just going to go and keep doing what we do.
What should parents do to protect their children's identities? I spoke with a young adult when I was living in South Dakota who, unbeknownst to his family, had his identity stolen, unbeknownst to him as well. His identity was stolen when he was just 7 years old. They think it may have happened in a doctor's office. Someone went in there, some unscrupulous person who didn't mind stealing the identity of a young child and ruining a good part of the rest of his life. Certainly a child is in no position to protect themselves. What should the parents do for their children?
Well, if you have a child, you know, whether it's newborn or, you know, my daughter's 13, you know, you've done the same thing that your parents did for you. You've given out already that Social Security. First of all, you've got a Social Security number because we all want that tax break that comes with having a child. So then you've gone and you've given it to doctors, you've given it to dentists. There are daycares that have certainly asked for Social Security numbers in the past. So again, as parents, we just start giving this information out without even thinking about why are we giving it. So the first thing you do is stop that. Second of all is to go out there and monitor your child's Social Security number. You can do that yourself. You can contact the credit bureaus and ask for a credit report on your child's information. You should get a letter back that says no credit history exists. That's good news. If you get a letter back that says, here's the accounts that are under your child's name, guess what? You've got some work to do. Then you have to contact the Social Security Administration, or particularly maybe it's the Social Security Administration in your state, and ask for a work history on your child. This will look at – they'll give you a report based on your Social Security number of who's got jobs using your child's Social Security number. And we've heard countless stories over the years of parents who have not only seen that their child's information has been used in other parts of the United States or overseas to get employment, But these parents, some of them have actually gone to track down the person that is using the information. And when they've confronted management at the company, management takes side of the employee and says they've got rights and we're not going to allow you to see their information.
In this day and age, I mentioned earlier, Twitter and Facebook have had to announce in recent weeks that they've been hacked. What are some other precautions as we wrap this up that people just should be mindful of when putting their information out there?
Well, you need to be guarded, right? So you don't want to put anything out there that's going to lead back to you. You see a lot of individuals using false names, false details of where they live and who they are. But most of us are trusting souls. And so we're going to go out there and use our real name and our real information and just, you know, hope that things don't happen to us. You have to understand that when they hack into these systems, they're looking for passwords, they're looking for email addresses. So they can, the email address is obviously to go out there and you know, commit more scams, send out the emails that are going to bring people in to perform those phishing schemes. That hopefully somebody, you know, hooks into and brings them some money.
Mm-hmm.
Password, they're looking to go and see what they can do to maybe unlink your bank account.
So just be careful about, think about what you're doing because somebody else could easily get a hold of it and then you're in for a myriad of problems.
Absolutely. You know, you want to be able to tell people, just go live your lives. And if you take those other steps, your fraud alert, the credit freeze, one of these companies in the industry, you can actually go out there and sleep a little bit easier because, again, you've done what you've had to do to protect yourself. If something still happens, then you know what? You got to go do what you got to do.
Mike Prusinski, Chief of Staff and Vice President of Communications for Pittsburgh-based internet security company Traversa, joining us here in Studio A. Mike, obviously this topic has struck a chord with our listeners. You've given us a lot of good information, and we'll look to have you back to revisit this topic because it's certainly not a problem that's going away anytime soon.
I wouldn't bet on it. A couple of weeks, the new report from the Federal Trade Commission will come out, and it'll be interesting to see if Pennsylvania actually moves up. They're ranking 14th right now. It'll be interesting to see if they actually move up in that.
Mike Prusinski, great thanks to you for being here on Essential Pittsburgh. And we'd like to have you continue the conversation. You can call 412-256-8783 to leave a message. We may use your voice on the air. Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris on the business of event planning when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.